I'm Dr. Rose Aslan, and I'm a transformational life coach, breathwork teacher, and scholar of religion who supports helpers, rebels, misfits, marginalized, and spiritual and spiritually curious folks. Welcome to Rahma with Rose, where I create a bold space of warmth, understanding, and pluralism in a world that often feels chaotic, polarized, and judgmental. You are not alone, and the stories I share here will reinforce this. Each episode will delve into inspiring stories, practical tips, and thought-provoking and heartfelt conversations with thought leaders, healers, coaches, mental health professionals, and other individuals who are part of the quiet revolution of women healing around the world. So join me on this podcast exploration as we explore what happens when we allow compassion into our lives, one story at a time. Hi, Salams. Today on this episode, I have with me Shazia Imam, speaking from Dallas, Texas. She is an award-winning speaker, ICF certified coach, and host of the top 12 podcast Feminine and Fulfilled. After experiencing her own life fall apart after losing her son and then husband, Shazia realized it was a divine push to begin living her real life. This blossomed into finding her soulmate, discovering her feminine power, and living her deep purpose, one which involves women unleashing their whole selves to feel fulfilled, happy, and whole. Isn't life more fabulous that way? Ah, Shazia, welcome. And any woman, and any especially any Muslim woman who's on this path to helping other women fulfill their divine feminine, to come into their own, to find the purpose of life, is a friend of mine. So it's such a pleasure to have you. So let's get started. And I was really excited to speak with you. And first of all, my condolences on having lost your son and your husband. And I'm glad that you will be able to share this with me and that you've processed enough to be able to share this with us today.
Yeah. And I just want to clarify, I was thinking recently, I think I need to shift my bio a bit because we lost our son, but our marriage fell apart. So I lost my husband. The grief was in losing the marriage, which of course we can touch on. And actually, at the time that we're talking now, Rose, my father passed away recently as well, which is quite unexpected. And the grief process was actually quite different. So it's been a really interesting journey.
My condolences on the loss of your father as well.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. So as a result of this, it sounds like you've been through some very difficult times. You've been pushed to explore your inner self, perhaps more than other people due to these tragedies. So could you tell me a little bit, when do you remember first starting getting interested in spirituality in general, before we get into healing? When did you get interested in spirituality?
So spirituality for me, I would say, came in two phases. I was born Muslim into a Desi South Asian family, and I was born and raised in the United States. So my experience growing up in the 80s and 90s as a Muslim in a small white town was going to the masjid, having potlucks, having a community. And so definitely that was a part of my identity. Being Muslim was part of my identity. But because I grew up in, like I said, a small town, I was one of very few brown people. I also took on an identity of being white. I think I thought I was white until I was in college, to be honest. So for me, I always felt that there were two parts of me, and I just lived like that. So for me, I didn't really find my own sense of spirituality until I was about 22. It was my senior year of college. And then I found it again at 30 after my son passed away and my marriage fell apart. I definitely came to a very spiritual relationship with Allah. So I've always felt very close to Allah, but I've definitely transitioned from the halal haram of Sunday school to then learning more about my deen in college, becoming practicing, putting on the hijab when I graduated, and then moving into that deeper sense of connection and reflection mm-hmm. when I turned 30 and beyond. Okay.
So could you tell us, if you're willing, what happened when you were 22 other than kind of learning more about Islam?
Sure. So there was this guy that I had met and I got really excited. He was Muslim. He was also Desi. And I was so excited because I thought, oh my gosh, here I am. I'm going into my senior year of college and he's going to be the guy and I will check off all the boxes of doing the thing I'm supposed to do as a Muslim girl. And in our community, you get the degree, you get married, you marry another Muslim, Desi, and then you live that white picket fence dream, the jobs and buy a house and all of the things. And unfortunately, it turned out that he had a mental illness. I don't think I've ever shared this story actually publicly. So here I am just thinking my fantasy is going to be fulfilled. Prince Charming has come and he has a very severe mental illness. And even knowing that, even finding that out, I thought, it's okay, but he checks off all the boxes and who else is going to marry me? I thought nobody would want to be with me. I'd always been a rebel. I definitely was a nonconformist. So the idea of a Desi guy being into me just felt like I had hit the jackpot. Everything happens to us for a reason. And I believe he came into my life specifically because he gave me this book. He gave me this book and I don't even remember the name of it, subhanAllah. But in just the first few pages, it said something to the effect of, if you are spending more attention, paying more attention or spending more time or giving more priority to something other than Allah, then you are an idolater. It just hit me and I was like, oh my gosh, whoa, what am I doing with my life? And now that I say that, it sounds very harsh, right? I don't subscribe to that. But at that time, we're on our journey. I thought I've got to change. So as senior year started, what had actually happened is there was a new community that had come up at my university too, because I did try to join the Muslim Student Association my freshman year, but they were all these international male students. It didn't fit me. They were talking about whether music is halal or haram. Come on, I'm a freshman in college. That's not what I want to be talking about. So by the time I hit my senior year, there were two women who had come together and they were reviving a real undergraduate Muslim feel. And so again, timing, it's all about timing. So I joined and it was wonderful. It was a new group of students. So many of us really coming back to our deen. It was also post 9/11. We're literally talking about that same time frame. So a lot of things are happening at once. And so I just got really involved. There was a community of sisters. There were nine of us. We're still bonded. Two decades later, we're still so close. And yeah, it was just a lot of learning. It was almost like starting over again. And so that's where I started really deepening my learning and understanding outside of what I'd learned in Sunday school. Also feeling that community at where I was in my life at that point. And that was very important to be on that journey with others. That's what I needed at that place.
Community, it sounds, was really fortifying in your spiritual experience.
Yeah, absolutely. Coming back to the masjid, feeling that to the point that, yes, when I graduated, I did put on hijab. All of the women in our group, we all put on hijab. I was the last. I said, no, I really have to feel this out. I never, ever thought I would wear hijab. Like I was a girl with the pixie cut with purple streaks in her hair. Like I... Hijab just didn't seem like something that would be of interest to me. I liked it for others. But again, our path, it's so interesting. So at 22, I graduated, I put on hijab and my dad was so angry with me. My mom was like, do whatever. But my dad really said, now you're going to lose all these opportunities. You had the whole world in front of you and you're becoming an extremist. So it's really interesting because people thought my dad was making me wear it. And in fact, my dad was so upset about it. So there's these nuances, even within our community, that I've noticed that non-Muslims don't really understand. It's not just you do things a certain way. So even that was part of my journey in saying, Dad, I really do want to wear this. And 2 weeks after I started wearing hijab, I got 3 job offers in the worst market. So again, all of these things, part of the journey, such clarity in this was the right path. I was doing the right thing and going from there.
Beautiful. And I love that he had purple hair. I also had purple hair back in high school, as well as green and blue hair. So I love that fellow colored hair aficionado. Beautiful. And I think MSAs, Muslim Student Associations, for many American and Canadian Muslims, are often really important places that play a pivotal role in them finding religion, spirituality away from home, away from the mosque setting. So that's important mm-hmm. that also for you played that role. Mm-hmm. You mentioned then at the age of 30, when you lost your son, would you be willing to share more about that? I can't imagine, having had my son at 31, I just couldn't imagine what it would be like to lose your son.
Yeah, it was very devastating. So at 28, we lost our baby boy, and it was very unexpected. And my marriage started to unravel, understandably, after that. And it's interesting because losing my son was so difficult, but losing the marriage mm-hmm. was actually harder. It was harder because it really points to the pressure that we have as a community for our lives to look mm-hmm. a certain way. And I couldn't imagine failing. That's mm-hmm. what I thought it was. I thought mm-hmm. it was failing. And so I'm going through all of this. I'm at the lowest point in my life, the lowest point. I mean, to the point where I would drive around and I would wish a car would come hit me and that mm-hmm. I would die because I didn't think my life had mm-hmm. any value. I thought it was worthless. I lost. Now my marriage is ending. What's my worth? Mm-hmm. So in 2010, I had turned 30, and a dear friend of mine, Zora, she told me about this program called Rihla. And mm-hmm. Rihla is this 3-week spiritual journey that you take. It's in all sorts of places around the world. And it was coined by Sheikh Hamza Yusuf. And what he wanted to do is he wanted to create the opportunity for people to have. In Islam, there is this idea of if you go away for 40 days, if you inculcate a habit for 40 days, like that's how it really lasts. So he wanted to take Western Muslims and give them this opportunity to learn their fard al-ayn, like mm-hmm. basics of Islam. And it's surprising because even when you think you know a lot of things, we actually don't know the basics. There's so much to relearn. So it was going to be in Spain, 3 weeks in southern Spain in the mountains and mm-hmm. Granada. But Zora says, Shazi, I really think you should go to this. And I thought, Zora, you've got to be kidding me, because my husband has pronounced divorce and we're going into the iddat period and my iddat period will end while I'm in Spain. Are you kidding me? I have to save this marriage. I can't go. I can't go. And she's, you have to go. Just go. And I don't know, I listened to her. I really valued her. And again, Allah's always putting things in your path. So I filled out the application. I was accepted and I was dreading it. I didn't want to go. And when I arrived, because I did go, I found myself being very much of a loner. So I've already shared with you how much community matters. I am an extrovert and I get to the program where literally like the women... We're staying in a barn, okay, an old stable, basically, with all these bunk beds. You are around people, but I didn't want to talk to anyone. I was just in my own place. I came truly to just receive whatever I was meant to, because my life was at its end, I felt. I was thinking, what am I doing here? Why am I here? What is going on with my life? Everything is out of control. Everything. And so I would just be wandering. I would wander the mountains and I would just come back for meals and then I would wander. And I remember one day making dua to Allah and I just said, make this clear, make it easy. Why do you have me here? Just really crying out in those moments where you really like, there's nothing else. And I remember just making this dua and then going for lunch. And I sat next to this woman, this older woman, who was from Australia. And I don't know why I started telling her my whole story. And so she's listening and she says, there's somebody you need to meet. And I said, okay. She said, the Sheikh of Dr. Omar bin Abdullah is here from the Gambia.
Sheikh Mohammed, yeah.
Yes. And she said, he's here for one day and you need to meet him. And I said, okay, I don't know who he is. This was my first foray into the spiritual, I'm using air quotes, but the spiritual part of the Islamic community.
This is great to hear how someone from more mainstream community got exposed. So keep on going, please.
Yes. She gets it set up. So I meet with him and he doesn't speak English at all. And she said, The other, the manners in which that you speak to a scholar or a shuch of this level is to just ask, what advice do you have for me? So I went with one of the volunteer coordinators, Zainab, and she speaks Arabic. And so I just sat there and I guess he asked her, why is she here? I don't even know what he asked because it was in Arabic. I just asked, what advice do you have for me? So he looks at me and he gives me this weird, where this, a compilation of dhikr, and for me, it was dhikr and two surahs to read.
So to translate for people who don't know Arabic, a dhikr is Sufi remembrance or remembrance of God, and Sufis have formulaic prayers that they repeat in order to purify their hearts more.
And we even have dhikr, like even mainstream Muslims, like after you pray, you'll repeat like subhanallah, alhamdulillah. He gives me something very specific. It's a word. So when it's a compilation of these different things, it's a word and it's specific to you. And as soon as he said it, because he said, say, Ya Allah, 111 times, say, Ya Wadud, 111 times. And I knew what Ya Wadud meant, the most loving. Ya Allah, of course, Allah, oh Allah. Oh, the most loving. And then recite Surah Shura and Surah. I can't think of the name. Idha Jaa Nasr Allah, Surah Nasr. So as soon as he says this, I already know Surah Inshura. This is the surah that says, verily, with every hardship, there are eases. And it repeats itself. Verily, with every hardship, there are eases. And I just started crying because I knew, I was like, God, he sees into my soul. And the thing is, it wasn't him. It was that Allah had sent this. It was, I had cried out and then Allah had sent the response. I'm going to start crying again. And I knew in that moment that I was really taken care of, that Allah loved me. And I felt it deeply. And so I said, okay, and that was it. The meeting was done. And so I started reciting this word every day. And I decided, it's like, it gave me the relief to be like, I don't have to control anything. There was nothing for me to control. And so I let go completely. And this point was pivotal for me to understand that our relationship with Allah is not transactional. I speak a lot about this with my clients. It's not transactional. We don't do something. We're not good, and so Allah responds. We just are, and then Allah is there. And that is what I felt, that Allah was taking care of me in this hardest of time in my life. And that set me on a beautiful spiritual journey that still to this day, I feel so connected to Allah, not because of the things I do. I am practicing, alhamdulillah, I'm observant. But I feel connected with Allah through nature, through conversation, through just the miracles that I see, the knowing that I have, that truly I can let go because Allah has it taken care of. And so much has opened up for me since.
Beautiful. Thank you for sharing, Shazia. And would you say that your healing path coincides and is intertwined with your spiritual path?
Yes. I'm like, how long do you have? The story of my life is so fascinating because after that moment where I felt like Allah had sent me this message, I found that once I let go, life started moving very rapidly for me. So to finish that story, because I did mention I was right in the iddat, which means for Muslims, this is a period where it gives a time to reconcile. You have this 3-month period. And if you reconcile in this time, then you're still together. And if you don't, then the divorce is final. And I think it's such a beautiful thing to allow people to come back.
Actually, and technically, it's also to make sure the woman is not pregnant too.
Yes. I'm not into all the technical anymore, but yes, you're right.
My scholar coming back for a moment.
Scholar yes, you are correct. You are correct. So when I came back, the divorce was final. And I don't know what my former husband thought, but he thought that we were good. So he called me when I had arrived back, thinking he was going to pick me up from the airport. And I said, we're divorced. Like, we're not together. And I actually didn't tell anybody about this. And I lived out of my car for about 2 months because, again, the shame, I was still so worried about the shame. So I lived out of my car. It was right. Ramadan was right around that time, too. It was in that season. And it was just a very spiritual Ramadan. And it was the freest I'd ever felt in my life because actually nobody knew where I was. And there is a part of me that's a little bit of a loner. It's really interesting because I'm such an extrovert and I love people so much. But there's a part of me that when I can be alone, I feel a freedom that I don't when people are like, where are you? What's going on? What's happening? And so I was completely on my own. And when I let him know, because then he called me again a few months later and I want to try to work things out. And I said, we're done. And then he said, oh, okay, but I want to be with you. I want to be with you. And this whole time he had been not wanting to be with me. So here it is. I let go completely. And now he wants me back. So it's very interesting. So we did get back together. I'll just do this Cliff Notes version. We did get back together for a few years and then ultimately ended, alhamdulillah. And that was the right time for us. But yes, that was part of my healing journey. Thank you. Mm-hmm. That was part of my healing journey. It's almost as though Allah knew, like, she needs baby steps. She needs gentleness. She needs tenderness. Like, we can't just all of a sudden do everything all at once. And that worked for me because by the time it ended again, so actually for people on the inside, I'm like, I'm on my third marriage now because we had to have our nikah again. So I married him twice.
I love it.
So I'm on my third marriage.
Two men, three marriages.
Two men, three marriages. It's very interesting because that was part of my healing. When we got back together again, I came in a little bit different. Now I'm coming in and with this spiritual perspective. Now I'm going deeper into my journey. Now I'm diving deeper into who I am and what happens if I let go. And those years were pivotal too for the healing. So I really love the way that Allah just does everything beautifully. Just the timing. We as humans, we think, oh no, by 30, like I was thinking, oh my God, my life's going to be over because I'm going to be in a divorcee at 30. And guess what? I met my now husband at 35 and he's fantastic. We're a really good match together. We're going on almost 8 years. And now when I look back at my 30-year-old self, I do wish I could have said, you're going to be so good. It's just not in the way that you thought. It's just not in the timeline that you thought. Time to us means something, but to Allah, it is something else. And I just love understanding that. And even when I don't understand it, just allowing myself free fall into it. Even when I don't understand something, I love that I've come to a point where I can reflect on, okay, Allah knows, and it's going to just work out just right.
Beautiful story. Thank you for sharing how you found hope and beauty, inspiration through the difficulties and through the hardships.
Absolutely.
I'd love to talk more about healing modalities. Most people who are in this kind of world that we're in coaching and helping others, often we try out different healing modalities. Which ones have you tried? Which ones have resonated with you the most?
For me, I love all the modalities, right? I think anything works, and I'm a believer in throw everything at it. There's not, someone's like, is that really going to work? I'm like, I don't know, but it doesn't hurt to try. What I love about healing is that all of these modalities at some level, they just feel good. They allow something to be processed. So where I'm at in my journey now is something that I think isn't talked about as often. Is somatic healing.
We're in the right place now here, Shazi. I talk a lot about somatic healing here. So excellent.
Yeah, our body really knows things. So again, Desi girl growing up in the States, it's a very heady way of thinking. It's all about practicality. It's all about get the good education so you can keep checking these boxes. I had this, this theme of checking boxes in my life. It's a very mental exercise, but our healing and our movement forward doesn't come from checking off boxes. Mm-hmm. It comes from that deeper work, and our body actually knows. The answers are in our body as well. And so I have found the thing that allows me to be the most connected is any sort of somatic healing or somatic work. So that can look like, for some people, it's breath work. I think at a very basic level, it can be breathing. And if you go all the way, it's dancing and movement and anything that involves your body. Yeah, for me, what it's been is the dance and the movement. So anything that incorporates that, I find that I'm able to really tap into myself. I can really tap into my intuition. Mm-hmm. I can tap into letting, like releasing things, creating big visions, like feeling and seeing the vision. That mm-hmm. comes to me when I'm in that movement. Mm-hmm. And when I, again, it's just like letting myself go mm-hmm. because it gets me out of my head. Otherwise, I can be a very heady yes. person. I'm an engineer by background. So I love mm-hmm. it. I wish that we would do more of it. I think it's something still very new, even as mm-hmm. a modality, but I love it. And it can be like mm-hmm. fun. It can just be in your room to a song. Mm-hmm. It can be mm-hmm. if you want guidance, there's guided somatic experiences. There's so many ways to do it.
Thank you for sharing. I knew that's why we vibe, because I'm also very much into somatic healing, body, breath work. All of that is so powerful for people. So I'm so glad you've also brought that into your life and maybe mm-hmm. with others around you. What's in your toolbox then? Whenever you're noticing that your nervous system is out of whack and dysregulated, what do you pull out? What are your kind of go-to resources?
My go-to resources is definitely around breath. Mm-hmm. So the longer exhale, I don't know the technical term for it. You could do a count of an inhale for three and your exhale through the mouth, you could do for a six. I do this with mm-hmm. my clients before we start our sessions. And I love that. I'll do the same thing. If I find myself like my nervous system is like out of whack or charged or whatever is coming up, I'll do that. And just that I can think about it, it's done. So I'll do that. Something else that I really like, and I don't know if it's considered a modality per se, but I just feel my feelings. Mm-hmm. I think it's really important to feel the feelings. Mm-hmm. So don't resist them. That's mm-hmm. something I used to do before I went through all of this work, is I didn't want to feel the feelings. I wanted to compartmentalize mm-hmm. them and put them away because I had to show mm-hmm. up a certain way. And now I just feel the feelings. If I'm sad, I'm going to cry. There's nothing wrong yeah. with it. And sometimes my husband will say, "What happened?" And I'm like, "I don't know. Nothing happened. I'm just sad. It's okay. It's okay to be sad.
Yeah.
It's okay to be angry. It's okay to be yeah. happy even. It's also, don't feel guilty for feeling happy. Yeah. Feel all the feelings to their fullness. And that acceptance of my feelings is powerful because it allows mm-hmm. me to be.
Mm-hmm. Riding the waves of being human, I think we can call.
Yes. Yeah. The feminine is yeah. very cyclical and mm-hmm. just really leaning into that. Yeah. I just pull from that all the time. Mm-hmm. I really do a check-in. And one other tool I've been doing recently, I want to share this one. This has mm-hmm. been so good too, is I don't know. I think I saw this on Instagram somewhere, but it talked about when you wake up in the morning, you're in a theta state. Mm-hmm. Again, not sure the technical terms, but you're in a theta state, which means that your subconscious and conscious, I think, are more connected. Something's happening. Anyhow, it's a great time to not just have an alarm blaring or mm-hmm. grab your phone or start the day. Right when your eyes are fluttering open, mm-hmm. it's a great time to connect to whatever it is that you're wanting to connect with. So whether that's on a spiritual level, I actually learned mm-hmm. this in my mm-hmm. spiritual path in 2010. You can actually at that moment ask Allah, make an intention for the day. Yeah. Will Allah make my day XYZ, whatever you feel. So it's the moment you can connect spiritually. And just recently, what I've been doing is I tell myself, I am loved, mm-hmm. I am safe, I am held. And it just starts my day off really grounded. Because you're affirming to yourself in that theta state where you're at. So it can go mm-hmm. either way. You can either tell yourself something or you can connect with Allah. Mm-hmm. Either one has always been very helpful for me.
That's really powerful, especially nowadays, since most of us are so addicted to our screens. Probably what's the first thing most of us do is we grab our phone, right? Mm-hmm. The news. And then we get active. Our nervous system is activated immediately if we open up the news or something, right? Or look at social media and we see other people's issues and events going on around the world. So what a better way to start the morning, mm-hmm. or connecting with the divine.
Yes.
Beautiful. Great idea for other people to try out. Anything else you want to share that's in your toolbox?
The last one I'll share is forgiveness. This one was really important. So I use a modality called Ho'oponopono, which is mm-hmm. from the Polynesian culture. It might be from others as well. I had learned this as a way to really release things. It's a great exercise to do. I'm going to just share this podcast episode. It talks yeah, sure. about it. But on my podcast, Feminine and Fulfilled, if you listen to episode 2, mm-hmm. Forgiveness, I talk mm-hmm. about it in there in mm-hmm. depth. What I love about forgiveness is it really is a modality to release mm-hmm. and let go. And I find that the thing that I can hold on to are just the recurring thoughts, or this person did something, or why did this happen to me? And there is this quote that says that resentment is like drinking poison and hoping the other person will die. And I don't ever think I had that level of resentment, to be quite honest, but I still had too many things sitting on my brain, too many things that when I did forgiveness the first time, oh my gosh, it was like a weight had been lifted off my shoulders. And I find that I still incorporate that. It's almost like it was a big thing when I first did it, but now it's more of a maintenance thing. And I love forgiveness because it allows me to live in the world in such a trusting way. Now, is everybody wonderful to me? No, they're not. But I choose to see the world in a way that people are. And if they're not, then I let it go. I don't need to hold on to it. I don't need to be strong and right. And again, I'm not trying to control my life. I want to see the good in life, and I want to be a part of that. And forgiveness is really a great tool to allow that to happen.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And of course, in Islam, we also have istighfar, seeking forgiveness from Allah. And so it's a beautiful to take from. Personally, I love learning from all the different wisdom traditions. And then it also connects back to our own tradition, right? There's nothing different. And might as well make it even more fulfilling and even more rich with other traditions within
it. I love that you reminded me of that. You're right. That's exactly like what we have.
Yeah, beautiful. So what does it mean to be Muslim now for you? You've been this long journey from being, as you mentioned, from a traditional Desi American household with a pretty conventional approach to understanding Islam. I'm assuming from a fear-based approach. And a lot of people I've worked with, a lot of women I've worked with come from similar backgrounds. What does it mean now to be a Muslim? What does it mean to be on the spiritual path as a Muslim? Far removed from that original way of understanding Islam, I would perhaps describe what you've told me is being on a love-based Islam approach. And this is what I speak a lot about in my podcast. What is that like? And tell us what that's like, really. And then we'll go from there.
I would agree wholeheartedly. It's very love-based. My Islam has definitely evolved into understanding that the real gem of our spirituality and our faith is actually our relationship with our Creator. And that is what I really focus on. Again, I'm observant, so I follow the things, but I'm not into the things. I'm not into the rituals. I'm not into, is this right or is this wrong? I'm over the halal and haram. Ultimately, Allah, who created the heavens and the universe, I don't think is worried about your nail polish. Okay. I'll just use that example because people can talk ad nauseum. And we're looking to somebody to give us a ruling on something. And look, here's what I love. There's something that Sidi Yahya wrote this, had said once. So he had said, you know how we talk about the straight path, right? Surah Fatiha, the straight path to that we need to follow the straight path. He said, we all have a straight path, but it's different. It's unique for each of us. That really landed for me. So for some people, they really appreciate the clarity and the rules. They're very scrupulous, want to make sure they're not getting anything wrong. And I love that for them. And for somebody like me, who is more free-spirited, that's not going to work. What works is this feeling of Allah is with me. So it's for me, it's definitely shifted into a deep relationship, shifted from feeling that Allah is like a schoolmaster, because that's how I used to see Allah, as a male schoolmaster. I feel Allah is very maternal. There's a feminine, we know, that has the masculine and the feminine attributes, or the 99 names that we know of. I really feel into that. I feel that, like, being held, being taken care of, being understanding, as my friend, that is where I'm at today. And it does have me sometimes raising an eyebrow at things that I did grow up with traditionally, wondering what, like, I need to know a little bit more about that. Is that really true? And it definitely has me feeling very jarred and annoyed when more of the cultural norms come in, where women have to be in a completely separate space. That's not a part of our sunnah or our example from the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, or things that really put women in a less than position. Again, not a part of our faith, but yet there's plenty of cultural norms that make that happen. So I find myself definitely openly saying I love following more of a Sufi path. I haven't joined any tariqa or group or anything like that. But before I used to feel embarrassed, don't say I'm Sufi, but I am. Being Sufi is also part of our deen, the tasawwuf. Mm-hmm. So I definitely feel more spiritual and I feel really comfortable with that. And I'm still continuing to evolve. I'm still continuing to evolve and I'm open to that. And I'm curious about it. And I know that my constant will always be Allah.
Yeah, absolutely beautiful. Thank you for sharing. And it's that curiosity that keeps someone like you keep on looking and exploring, allowing yourself to see what else is out there, to look into other traditions, to see what benefit you can bring into your own tradition. It's so rich what you've shared. As I mentioned before, I work with a lot of particular women who have been raised that halal haram dichotomy, who really want to go towards this love-based Islam, but they find it so difficult because the guilt is so strong. What do you tell people who are struggling with the fact that they know this love-based Islam is true for them, but this guilt won't go away? They can't remove it from their conscience.
Yeah, there's a lot of unraveling that has to happen. When I first started on my journey too, so my spiritual journey was in 2010, and I would say my personal growth journey, like the finding myself, really started in 2013. So they were happening at the same time, and I was very afraid that if I went on this personal growth journey, that I would actually lose my faith. That was my biggest concern, and I didn't want to do that. And so I found myself being very called to this journey. I was starting to get training as a coach too, and learning these modalities we were talking about earlier, and going to events that I'd never seen anything like it. And I'm thinking, oh my God, is this shirk? Is this wrong? Is this allowed? And what I learned over time is that I allowed myself to start trusting myself.
I love that.
I don't have a specific thing to do or not do, because everybody has to go through it themselves. I can be on this side being like, of course, it's great. It's wonderful to be on this side.
Trusting yourself, but trusting your intuition, your inner wisdom is leading you to a good place.
Exactly. It's about trusting that I knew enough. I had enough faith to understand if something was going beyond what I thought was okay, that I could not participate or pull back. And then allowing myself also to be open to things that, yeah, you know what? Maybe if like I was standing in a community of Muslims, they might think I'm weird, but will Allah think this is weird? No. So being open to new things, it helped expand my heart in so many ways. And it had me connecting with Allah in a deeper and deeper way. And that's a piece, again, if you trust yourself and you also ask Allah, I definitely would ask Allah all the time, please make sure I'm doing things right. I still do that. Allah will make things clear as well. So it is good to start exploring. It is good to move out of the halal haram framework, because if you don't, what I have seen is when women get stuck in that place that where you're talking about, they don't allow themselves to explore that more spirituality, that love. What happens is they start losing faith, and that becomes a more slippery slope. It's actually better for you to explore that love-based Islam, that more spiritual place, than to not and then continue to be disillusioned, upset, not connecting at all, because Allah wants us to turn back. So you can't make any mistake that you can't turn back from. If that helps you to say, okay, let me like learn or try, then I've always seen it be very expansive for myself and for other women to move that way.
That's really useful. And I'm definitely going to share this episode with people who have these issues. And I really want them to hear how someone like you has been able to transcend those, often we say, problematic approaches and lack of love in religion. So it's beautiful to see that it's not like that. It doesn't have to be like that if we push ourselves a little bit further out of the envelope. Yes. I love what you said, that, you know, whether Muslims think about us doesn't matter. It's what Allah, what God thinks about us that really matters.
Yes. Yes. And I just think Allah is like, you're doing great. I just feel like that. You're fine. You're good.
Yeah.
And if you need to say that to yourself or hear me saying that or whatever it takes, like, you are. You are doing great. Yeah. For anybody listening, you're doing great. The fact that you even think at this level, if you're reflecting at this level and you are in that much of a relationship that you don't want to do the wrong thing, that's beautiful. That already tells me, like, you're not going to do anything wrong.
Yeah.
You're going to be good.
Yeah, excellent. Thank you. And as we wrap up, what pearls of wisdom would you like to leave with listeners, that life lessons, things that you find really essential to living a good life, a fulfilled life?
That's a great question. So my pearl of wisdom would be to be open. I think that this is something that was missing in religion for me. Organized religion can be, and not just Islam, but in general, can be so, this is the way, again, the rules, and this is how you do, and this is what you believe, and this is what you don't believe. This is, you know what? I just believe in being open. Again, if we are to just look, all you have to do is go outside, and I'm looking at the clouds right now through the window. If Allah created all that we can see with our naked eye, and we believe there to be even more beyond that, and we believe in our Lord that we don't see, but we trust is there listening, then let's not be closed off to things. Let's continue to be open, because there's so many things that we don't understand, so many things that we don't know. And it can be very delightful to be open and to be curious. It's a different paradigm than what we've learned. Mm-hmm. But we'll show you like beautiful signs. And yeah, it's delightful to just pay attention to those.
Absolutely fabulous. Thank you, Shazia. And it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the show. Could you tell listeners, if they want to look you up, if they want to find you online, where can they find you in the online world?
I am everywhere. So my website is thelifeengineer.com. I'm on Instagram at thelifeengineer. I'm on Facebook at Shazia TLE, as in The Life Engineer. And also, please tune into my podcast, Feminine and Fulfilled.
Excellent. Thank you. And it's been wonderful. And if you look into the show notes, you'll also find all these links copied into the show notes. So thank you, Shazia.
Thank you, Rose.
Are you looking for help bringing more compassion into your life and letting yourself out of the box and into the real you? I'd love to support you on your journey. Check out my one-on-one and group coaching offers and sign up for my mailing list to receive updates about my offers. Follow me on Instagram and Facebook under Dr. Rose Aslan Coaching, or visit my website, compassionflow.com.